This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We have a name, Tyler Robinson, the suspect now in custody in the assassination of Charlie Kirk. A press conference taking place earlier this morning, and we will go to that shortly so you get a chance to watch it and absorb everything that said today from my director Cash Patel and others on that. But we're going to go right now. Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, joining us. You were on Fox and Friends this morning just before the president and just before they made the big announcement. And then I know you were there also as they were breaking down that presser. What was your initial reactions here to this news?
You know, my initial reaction from get-go to now is high tempo of really coordinated effort. And I was really originally given a lot of that ability to have that tempo to the fact that I consistently been saying that this individual, Tyler, now as we know his name, was planned out, but horrible at execution. You know, he just didn't have the reps to pull this off. So he left a lot of data prints along the way that led to him. But then as I'm listening and watching the presser again today, and that was I watched the one last night, which was clear, concise, and to the point without taking questions. That's the first one that really struck me, Tony, because throughout this entire thing, you know, as we baseline human behavior and look for deviations, which I do so that we can assess what is, the thing that really struck me from the beginning was this horrendous assassin was fitting a pretty standard profile you and I have seen for the last bunch of years, right? And so nothing was really standing out here. It's going to just be typical as usual. And then part of that process has always been us, and me especially, looking at pressers. Mm-hmm. Because I'm assessing whether they got, excuse my language, got their shit together or not. Is there leadership? Is it all over the place? You know, because we see that so many times for the cases that we cover, we have a crap show. Everyone's kind of posturing, battling for who's going to say what. And it's kind of disjointed. We get some details. We're asking questions. But this one had kind of a different flavor from the beginning. And I was thinking it's because of all the data we're getting, right? Mm-hmm. So they made it, you know, the culprit made it easy on them. Mm-hmm. But then last night it shifted. So I'm on last night with News Nation last night on Leland's show and watching the presser live and giving the commentary. And what really struck me was everyone had an expectation, especially with Bongino going out there and Patel going out there. And they were there part of the presser that it was going to be a longer presser, that they had a big announcement to make. And then they didn't. Mm-hmm. And then I said to myself, all right, so what's different? Mm-hmm. And it still seemed clear, still seemed concise. I'm watching the nonverbals of people around each other being very supportive and no animosity towards each other, which was kind of striking to me in a good way. And then when they didn't take questions, and the governor, who's been very articulate these days, very clear, concise, very detail-oriented, give you enough to not like you and I covered, you know, Arkansas, you know, that yeah. thing with that horrible lack of information, you know, yeah. also Kohlberger's initial thing with no information, people running amok. I mean, this was very, very specific, controlled enough to keep you satisfied, but wanting more, right? Mm-hmm. And then when he didn't take the questions and left the stage, I was like, what caused that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's when it kind of resonates with me. That, and I've been holding this, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but there's a lot of cases where they're getting close and they just need a bump, kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, so let's think in terms of Donna Adelson case, mm-hmm. right? They bumped her to get a reaction. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, or in some cases, when they give pressers, it's to get a reaction from the suspect. Mm-hmm. And so last night when I'm watching this, I'm saying to myself, so what's one of the reasons why someone wouldn't do this? Is because it might not just be to provide information, which is kind of limited, but enough. It was maybe to spur the suspect or someone around him into action. Mm-hmm. And so let's then back off and see what happens. And no kidding, that's exactly what happens. It spurred the next part of this, which was really striking me. And that's what the press conference today, which I took away from it. More of the same. We have an individual that has been radicalized online, you know, hate, you know, objectifying a human being by all the etchings, you know, probably a life arc of escalating radicalization, violence from people around him. But here was what really struck me first was, the father turned him in. Mm-hmm. And I say to myself, that's a deviation, right? There's been other opportunities from cases that we've covered for family members, friends to turn someone in, and they haven't. Just look at Koberger. Lots of red flags waving in the air, but no turning. And this isn't a bad family, but there's something that's not quite there yet, right? But in this case, a father turns him in. The fact that a father could turn him in because it was a family priest or family friend that did it. And also he apparently confessed to a friend or alluded to a friend that he did it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of ringing to some notoriety, criminal notoriety. Look at me, you know, narcissistic moment for the individual. But it also throughout this, what is striking me, Tony, is we got and Stacey, I'm sorry. We have some healthy relationships in here.
Yeah.
We have enough healthy relationships that people are communicating. And so we're getting communication at the crazy level of where the bad guy's at, enough that's going to compel people to take action. And then most notably, we're getting healthy relationships at the leadership prosecution level of let's find the bad guy.
Yeah.
I think they said 36 hours, 11,000 leads, and they got them. And when you're presenting this information, so let's put our politics aside. Yeah. This is the gift that we'll keep on giving that Charlie Kirk just gave us. And the governor said this in a moment. This is a defining moment. And what are we going to do with it? I was reestablished and reaffirmed that I have a possibility to have some good faith and trust in our system of safety and law enforcement in our country based on what just happened. Mm-hmm. That's the first time that you and I have covered a case yet where I've said, that was done really well.
Yeah.
So that's my initial take on everything. I know it's kind of a long opening monologue on it, but I started shifting away from the subject that was just kind of average, you know, the typical thing we've seen to what was different was everyone else. I mean, that was pretty profound.
Well, and this man that they arrested, the 22-year-old, I mean, until this week, I mean, his life on the surface anyway, it looked pretty ordinary. Yeah. You know, if you look at his Facebook page, which, you know, everybody at this moment in time, when we're recording this, this all literally has just gone down. So if you're watching this a little bit later and you're like, well, there's a variation here from what you're saying, this is the information we have as of this moment. Things do tend to shift. So before the keyboard warriors want to go nuts. Yeah. It's here's where we're at. But we're seeing pictures of family vacations, proud parents posting about his achievements, childhood photos. He was dressed up as Donald Trump for Halloween several years ago. I believe 2017 is the date on it. And now he's a man accused of firing that single shot at Kirk's rally. Normal kid is what a lot of people are saying when they just look at it. There has been some accounts I've been hearing coming out. And again, these are third-hand, second-hand accounts. I believe I did hear this was on Fox News as well. I think it was right before you were on or right after, one of the two, where it was accounts from a family member when they were together at a recent gathering. I don't recall which, but it was something to the effect of that the shooter had brought up Charlie Kirk in conversation, but nothing to the extent of I'm going to go hurt him in some way, shape or form, but more so his feeling he's spreading hate is what he was quoted essentially as saying to the family member at a gathering, but nothing to the level I think that anyone would suspect this anyway. I think that's going to be the weird part of this. This is not some terrorist coming in from another country. This is this does not appear to be, you know, your typical person that, you know, is a big gun enthusiast or things like that. Clearly, he knows how to use a weapon. There are some pictures of him using or holding one. I'm going to guess probably a household where you know, grew up with them, as many people do, but certainly had the ability to take a shot from that far away and hit a target. It does show some skill. That's not just a super lucky shot there.
Well, his dad was in law enforcement, so I imagine there was a culture. I don't want to say a culture of gun use, but it was commonplace. I imagine dad had to practice quite frequently. Yeah. I just wonder what goes through a parent's mind when they sit back and go, I'm going to have to do one of the hardest things I've ever had to do and turn in my own child.
Yeah.
You know?
Pure devastation.
Yeah.
absolute devastation. You know, and to your point, Stacey, on the firearms, maybe, I always say maybe because apparently my daughter, I only found that my daughter is 27. She's a nurse. And I only, it's only in the last couple of years that I find out that only, I think when she was a senior in high school, when she finally, like one of her friends knew that I was an FBI agent and they were asking, they came over to visit or something. They started asking about, you know, where I keep my gun or, you know, it wasn't innocent. They weren't looking for there, you know, just had questions about my weapon I carried as an FBI agent. My daughter goes, oh, he doesn't carry a gun.
What?
My daughter had no idea. You know, because you know, it's I'm not a gun guy either, but I had to carry a gun. I was actually a firearms instructor, so it really it depends on the family. But you know, to your other comment, it's got to be an absolute devastation. And we don't know yet about this other background. We're seeing, you know, when we're looking on social media, and this is to the point of everything that goes on. This is. We kept hearing this thing, radicalization online, right? And and so because I'm a, you know, I was in the FBI during 9/11, you know, I'm slightly older, I'll turn 57 soon. You know, my idea of online radicalization, I'm thinking ISIS jihadist.
Yes.
Yes.
But here's what's changed, guys, because actually I looked this up because this is, again, when we look for patterns, here's a new pattern. I kept seeing this, we keep seeing this on, because we've covered so many mass shootings recently, every single one of them is saying online radicalization. So I actually asked my Grok, define for me what we're seeing with this term radical online radicalization. And actually, I wrote it down. And it's basically this, and this is why it really fits this pattern. It is the finding, basically, our human behavior. We're finding groups and organizations to connect with because we're failing to do it in real life. Remember, our evolution, we are seeking to make human connections in person. You're not going to erase hundreds of thousands of years of our evolution as a species, as we said last show, in 10 years of the evolution of social media, right? Sure. It just isn't going to happen. And so we're seeking these connections. And then to your point, Stacey, when all you're seeing on social media, which they're thinking they can substitute for in person, they're seeing the 5-second highlight reel of someone. Mm-hmm. That they can't match because they know their own reality. What do they feel? They feel lesser than. They feel not as good as. And then when you can throw a little bit of bullying, a little bit of disenfranchise, something doesn't go my way, and we don't know how to problem solve, which is the other huge thing that we're having it as a culture.
Yeah.
Lack of problem solving, feeling not connected. That's where the radicalization happens because now we have groups online that can help you feel good about, you know, being part of a group that's disenfranchised, and then they desensitize them towards violence. And we have that escalation of feeling like a wound collecting victim. And then what happens is we get that escalation. We then get our own negative confirmation bias by the things we see in the world, like Charlie Kirk. It doesn't matter if it's Charlie Kirk, Bill Maher. I don't care who it is. Tony, you, Stacey, you, me. If you're looking to find bad in someone, you will find bad.
Yes.
If you're looking to find good, you will find good. You just have to decide on what kind of bias you want to give yourself or what can you do to eliminate it altogether. So when you have a negative confirmation bias, Charlie Kirk was an excuse for what he was going to do no matter what, because he is radicalized to objectify a human being, take out violence on someone, and then here's what we don't know yet, but if we're playing the law's averages, there will be a triggering moment that happened to him from his perspective that caused him to go over the line and say, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And criminal notoriety, hands down, I think it's always been part of these people, because otherwise, if it was really about Charlie Kirk, he didn't like his message, he thought he's poisoning the world and everything like this, why do it in such a huge public venue and then brag about it to someone, look what I did? Unless it was all about you and your broken brain issues.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.